Hello, everyone, and welcome to our big idealism, emergent spirituality discussion debate. My name's Richard Cox. I'll be moderating, and I'll be moderating Tim Freake and David Webster. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good
Good
afternoon.
afternoon. So, I'll try and fumble out a brief introduction for the pair of you. Tim, probably the audience are aware of, has spent pretty much a lifetime at this point teaching spirituality, has written, I don't think we know how many books anymore, do we, Tim? But there's a lot of books. And the vast majority of those books took a perspective that we could call idealism when it comes to talking about the world. The idea that matter is not the primary thing which is giving rise to everything else, but rather consciousness is that which is foundational. And matter arises within it, like the stuff of dreams. So that's been where Tim's been at, with the exception of his last book, Soul Story, where he found that dissatisfactory in explaining the world he encountered and came up with something he's calling emergent spirituality. Now, David Webstell has spent a lifetime working as a counselor, engineer, teacher, and obtained a master's degree in consciousness studies and transpersonal psychology, and is currently writing a book on idealism. He's taken a great interest in Tim's book Soul Story, but he feels that maybe it's not necessary to move away from idealism, this consciousness-only perspective, and maybe Tim's gone a bit astray. I don't know. We'll hear from both of them, but he's sticking to his idealism guns anyway. So that's what we're going to hash out today. Does that sound like a fair and reasonably accurate introduction, gentlemen, that you can correct in if you wish to in your own spots? But are we in the ballpark?
Yeah, we'll go with that.
It sounds like an exciting period ahead to me. It sounds great.
Okay, so like just one additional note at the start from me, or two things actually. One, we've gone for a debate format for two reasons. One, we never do it, and we thought it might be fun. And it's going to be a very informal debate where we'll have a lot of time periods where people can speak and question, and then we'll break down into a general conversation. And also, we find that a lot of conversations around these things in spiritual circles are very non-confrontational, and everyone wants to be nice and agreeable. And we wanted to like really say, hey, that there are real differences in perspectives here, and maybe having a slightly more drawing on that debate-like format might help draw that out a bit more. And a final thing for me as an introduction, I'd just like to say that I've been on umpteen of Tim's Deep Awakening retreats, and I've also several times been on retreats and done stuff over the internet with David regarding his experiential exercises. And on the experiential, the direct experience side of things, I find both of their work profoundly transformative and shifting in one's view of reality. So that's kind of not up for the debate, the fact that these profound shifts in how we see reality and the whole world turning inside out and what appears like matter becoming consciousness and back again is all possible, and there are ways of facilitating that. It's really the interpretation of what's going on there that we're up for discussing today. So we'll start off with each of you having 5 minutes to lay out your views for the audience. So David, as you have the older and more established view, the one that's been around for thousands of years, we'll start with you to explain what is idealism, this consciousness-only approach, and why have you settled on that one as being your preferred account of reality?
Well, just before I launch into my time thing, that my
Okay.
view of idealism is a personal one, and I haven't been around quite for thousands of years, but but anyhow, yeah, well, so tell me
Great.
when to start.
Right. Well, we won't be super strict with it, but you've started. We've got 3 seconds gone already, so.
Okay, so what I'd hoped to do as a short introduction was to say something about how I came to this view from an experiential point of view, and then add something about how that comes as that fits into a metaphysical overview, but there's not time for both of those. So I'm just going to explain how I got into this. And I think from an experiential point of view, if you just look, I've got a saying above my desk, a Zen saying, which says, it's right in your face, this very moment. the whole thing is given. And I think that is really so. And I have developed over the years a series of exercises, firstly for myself to really explore this, and anybody can do them. And I'm quite happy to do this with anybody if they want to contact me. And it begins with closed eyes. I'm not going to sit here and go through the whole thing with closed eyes, but if you close your eyes, you find that there's a kind of spaciousness, a kind of open spaciousness, and it's a knowing spaciousness. There's knowing there, and there are different phenomena which are appearing. And so for me, this is consciousness. How I define consciousness is open, spacious, knowing, from which phenomena appear. And if we look at the phenomena, there are a variety of phenomena. There's bodily sensations appearing. There are sensations, if I close my eyes and I felt, I like to do this with closed eyes first, I can feel things which are outside my body, but they're inside the spaciousness. They are also phenomena of consciousness. Also, there are thoughts which are coming and going. And there's a series of thoughts which I call the I think I am, which is it's there quite a lot. If you do this in a very careful way, from closed eyes to open eyes, you can realize, you can recognize. I use the word recognize a lot, recognize. You can see again, you can recognize again that this world outside is, it's outside my body, but it's also in this spaciousness. This, everything in this outside world is also a phenomena of consciousness. And so I think that everything I have ever experienced are phenomena of consciousness appearing in consciousness and known by consciousness. And I think that's the same for everybody. I don't think anybody ever escapes out of there. As Kant said, you never know the thing in itself, if there's a thing out there. Now, there's a little problem that this could be solipsism. I won't go into that whole subject about is only my mind exists, but I think we can refute that in common sense. But if we were all apparently in the same space as we have been at times, we would see phenomena, the room and a table and chairs and people in it, and we would say, hang on a bit. They seem to be objective. There don't seem to be things coming up in my own mind. And one thing I forgot to say is, of course, there's the faculty of imagination. Consciousness can generate imaginary phenomena. And so we need to account for this objectivity. And now what I do here is I apply Occam's razor, the philosophical law of parsimony, that if you've got competing answers to one competing hypothesis for a problem, then choose the one which has the least new assumptions. And if I take materialism, I won't go through it, but there are a whole host of assumptions in materialism. First of all, you have to invent the stuff matter. So I would say that the most parsimonious hypothesis is that if everything is mind stuff, consciousness, then it's most likely that the source of objectivity is also something like a mind. And I would say it's an all-encompassing mind, a meta mind, which includes my mind, which and everybody else's mind, and also has the possibility of generating information from which all our individual apparent objective realities are made. Some people would say this is the mind of God. I prefer not to say the mind of God, because isn't God with a mind. I would say that God is universal mind. And rather than an individual mind, I would say I am a soul, an unique individual soul as an expression of that one mind. Okay.
That was timed perfectly, David. That was amazing. So thank you very much for that. Very difficult to concisely explain such a thing in a 5-minute slot. So well done with that. Tim, I'll turn to you now. You've developed this thing you're calling emergent spirituality. Go ahead and tell us whatever you want about why you found your work up until Emergent Spirituality not satisfactory to the world as you meet it, and what problems you've tried to address, and then really what is Emergent Spirituality?
Okay, I think I'll focus on the last bit, and then hopefully we can return to some of the things which David said so beautifully, and I can hum and haw about them with him, and why I've come to see them a bit differently. Because if anyone knows my work, especially a book like Lucid Living, for instance, it is a statement of pretty much what David just said. And I still think it's probably the most powerful way to wake people up to this universal consciousness. So why the change? Well, what happened actually before Soul Story was that I started wanting to develop a paralogical approach to this. Now, paralogical thinking, for those that don't know, is the center for me, which is both and thinking. So it's looking for opposites that complement each other. And one of those opposites is the idea of materialism versus idealism, which has been a philosophical conundrum for a long time. Now, I have ended up on the idealist side, or the consciousness side, because the materialist doesn't work. I think actually, you know, both of those names are just so outdated, because idealism now sounds like, you know, wanting the best, and that's not what it means at all in this context. So let's reduce it. In the book there, I talk about it. It's objective and subjective, because that's the key division that's happening here. That there seems to be a dichotomy between those who are drawn philosophically to the idea that what reality is essentially is an object, and from that, inexplicably, through the evolutionary process, subjects have arisen, and here we are. And then there's another view which goes, that really doesn't work. And here's another alternative. It's all a big subject. It's all a mind. And these are appearances arising in that mind. And these two, it's not materialism. I think materialism's dead even for science. Matter's gone, but it's still seen as object, even if it's energy, it's object versus subject. And the subjective view is held one way or another, probably by all mystical traditions, I would think, or certainly nearly all of the ones I've written on. So is there a way of reconciling these two positions? Is that the real, just that, is that the only option? I don't think so. I think there's actually a deeper option, which goes, look, there's something before subject and object. So rather than going, look, the ground of being is object, or the ground of being is subject, it seems to me the ground of being is neither. And it gives rise to both. So there's the problem with the consciousness first is that you take an analogy, which is, oh, I'm having this experience, and by definition, everything I'm experiencing is arising within my consciousness. That's by definition. It's unavoidably true. Therefore, there is a big consciousness, and the whole universe is arising within it. It's an analogy. And like all analogies, we need to be careful with it, because it's perceptive. But it also means we can smuggle in a whole lot of assumptions, because now we've got God and he's conscious and he's like us, presumably. He's conscious of this, like I'm conscious of this, but he's conscious, or she or it is conscious of the whole thing. So I'm not saying David's doing that, but that's often what happens in spirituality. And we need to go, what does that mean? Is that right? Have we just smuggled something in at the beginning to explain everything, but actually created something even more difficult to explain? So here's where I've ended up. I'll just throw this in. Hopefully I've got time. Which is, look, there is a ground of being. And the great thing about the word being is it's both subjective and objective. And it's, what is it? It's just potentiality. It's the potential for everything that comes into form. And that from that, through this evolutionary process, it's emerging in ever more, ever greater ways. And it emerges always both as subject and object. So the universe is objectively information being subjectively perceived by every individuating current of evolution, whether it's down on the most basic level of atoms and chemicals, right up to us being conscious of it. So that the universe is neither objective nor subjective, but it's something which is objective information, subjectively perceived, always both. There is no thing in itself, as Kant would say, it's always both. And so that enables us to heal that division. And then we can say things like, which seem obvious, which is that consciousness has actually arisen through this process as a very emergent phenomena, because consciousness is the state of knowing that we are. It's knowing being. And that isn't there at the start. That is something which is evolved. Now, there's an awful lot more to make sense of that, but I think that's probably enough, and I'm guessing my time is almost up, to put a foundation there, and hopefully I can make some sense of that. Because the difficulty for me, which I'm very conscious of, is that I'm trying to say something new. And as such, at first it feels like, whoa, what's that? But actually it's simpler than it sounds once it becomes familiar.
Spot on 5 minutes as well. I don't know if you both rehearsed that very well, but that was very impressive. Okay, we will thank you for the opening statements. We'll stay with Tim now, and I've allocated each speaker 2 minutes to pose a question or a series of questions to the other. And as David spoke first, we'll have Tim ask the question first. About what question you would have for David, really, about idealism, his approach, what he said in his introduction, anything like that. Maybe the points you're really critical of, whatever you feel like asking. And you can ask several, and David will just have to select what he feels he can respond to in his 4 minute response times, and then vice versa. But we can come back to them later on. Sorry, David, hang on. I've had you mute. Sorry, David.
Yeah, I said, and we'll have more time as well.
So, Tim, please go ahead.
Yeah, well, there's a lot, because obviously this is a deep issue. So let's just pick up on something very, very basic. Is I often hear people say, as David did, as I myself have many times, look, everything is arising in consciousness. You've never experienced anything outside consciousness. And in a way, it feels like then when we make the jump to the metaphysics from that, it now feels to me like a sleight of hand, because by definition, it seems everything is in consciousness. Of course it is. How could it not be? So everything, all we're really saying is everything I experience is an experience. If we actually make the jump to metaphysical jump, how do you actually avoid solipsism? That's the first, and the other side of the same question, the image which came up for me is it felt like this is a very childlike observation, which we grow out of. So, for instance, we had a baby here the other day. You play peekaboo with the baby, and the baby's startled because they live in a world where when you go, you've disappeared. And then you reappear, and it's funny and magical. And that's amazing. But very quickly, what they learn from that is, oh, there is a reality I am not perceiving. And I need to take that into account. So that there is a reality beyond my perception. There's also the past beyond my perception, which I need to take into account. And that in that way, we expand out from a solipsistic state, which we come into, to something greater. And what worries me is that often, especially as it's framed in modern spirituality, it's about withdrawing really into that childlike solipsism. And I wondered why you think that's not true, or what your thoughts are on it.
Okay, David, 4 minutes.
Yeah.
Away you go.
Okay. Well, I think solipsism, that would entail that you, Tim, are a figment of my imagination, and you, Richard, are a figment of my imagination. Now, if you, Tim, told me all the things you've done since we last met nearly two years ago, then I wouldn't think I'm somehow making that all up. I would think, yeah, and this guy seems to me, I've encountered him, I've looked closely into his eyes, he seems to be a sentient being to me. I think he is a unique, independent individual. And so this is how I would go about contradicting solipsism. One thing is, and maybe we have to be careful about how we use consciousness, because it's used in loads of different ways. I don't just use consciousness as being the subjective, the knowing side. As in my first statement, I tried to say that it is the knowing and it is the showing. It's dynamic and it's showing. So and it's not just hanging out, and I certainly don't advocate just hanging out in the subjective. And maybe a bit later I'll have a chance to say I tried that for a while, really intensely, when I was immobilized, and I had totally and utterly, to my surprise, a direct showing of the dynamism and so. But I won't try to. Maybe I'll have 2 minutes later to go into that. So yeah, and so I would refute solipsism, and I would say that consciousness is also dynamic. There is objectivity, and it's in information. It isn't necessarily in a concrete, out there, 3D world, which I seem to be perceiving. That's my individual, if you like, display. And I think some places in Soul's story, you seem to be saying that also. And so what if I look away, what I'm seeing ceases to appear for me, but it doesn't mean that the information from which that view was constructed goes away. That is objective. Okay, that, I don't know if that helps a little bit.
You have a minute and a half left, David. Is there anything else you'd like to add? Well, you can see the time if you
would. Did I not answer any? If there's something more you want me to say, Tim, you can.
So, okay, we can come to that in the general discussion then. I will.
Yeah, okay. Then, okay, I'll stop there.
That's great. Thank you. So, David, now, I'll same for you. Catch your breath. And whenever you can have 2 minutes to pose a question to Tim about his emergent spirituality.
First, I really appreciate the risk you've taken and the challenge to come up with a whole new. I really appreciate that, and I'm not just coming up with things just for the sake of it. I really appreciate what you've done, but I think there are some problems with it. I think just saying everything is potential is a little bit of a cop out, really, because I think we have to come to an agreement there is some kind of underlying reality of some kind, because we can have potential electricity, potential energy, the potential to do something. And so it seems like a word that's just hovering there, which could cover anything. So I'm not sure whether that's enough for me. And sometimes you seem to be saying that it's being. Sometimes you seem to be saying it's spirit. And in other places you say everything is time. And so you seem to be saying it is different things. Yeah, and so I think there is, I think a consciousness-only view can also be subjective and objective. You didn't talk about it then, but they're trying to include everything from, not everything from science. I think you're taking on board a lot of the problems within science. And I think there are problems, and we'll go into it in more detail, of the concept of emergence. I can see why you did it, but I'd like to, a bit later, to go into a bit more detail of why I think there are problems in that.
Yeah, really good question. Look, so I do refer to what I've got, typical paralogical thought for me, is two things. The yin and yang of things for me is what I see in this moment, which is the past meeting the possible, or formless potentiality meeting the accumulation of form as it has formed. And for me, that goes all the way back. I mean, actually, I think it goes back before the so-called Big Bang, before moment zero, but let's go back to that for now. So that when I'm saying, look, where is the Big Bang? Where's the universe arisen from? Well, if we say most things, we're putting something there. We're making something up and we're putting something there. If we say, well, one thing we know is it's arising from the potentiality for it, because here it is. So it's not just nothing. It's arising from the potentiality for it. Now, what name we give that? I've chosen the word spirit in the book, the traditional name, essence, which also essay to be being. Now, being is a very, I'm more in love with being. I wanted to hang it around some older spiritual concepts, which is why I'd use spirit. But I love the word being, because that's a very modern word, and it's both object and subject. And so for me, the potentiality is that. So there is, when I say the universe is the accumulation of time, the universe is form emerging and evolving. And what it's emerging from, or what is happening in every moment, is that this formless potentiality, spirit, if you like, or whatever being, is meeting everything that's happened. And each new moment is the new realization of a new potentiality, which includes implicitly within it everything that's happened already, everything that's come into form. So that what's giving birth to everything in every moment is that, the meeting of those two. And it's right here. It's not just at the Big Bang. It's right here. It's in every moment. Now, calling that potentiality consciousness is kind of works if you're a human being, because I have reached the level of emergence where I am experiencing consciously being. And that experience of pure being, well, in the evolutionary process, it feels like that consciousness of being is an emergent quality. It wasn't there for a long time. There was no consciousness. Consciousness arose with sensation. And what consciousness is the experience of being. And the experience of being first manifests as through sensation, and you get the experience of being the body, the sensual body. And so here I am, I'm conscious of being the body, and you see that in animal life and other forms. At some point, that becomes the emergence of psyche, the imagination, soul, and now that can evolve. This is the next level of actual spiritual initiation in the Gnostic tradition. You then become, oh, I am soul. I am this non-physical imaginary thing. I am this other level of being. And then there's the spiritual initiation, that last level where you go, oh, there's a level of being beyond any of that. And that's pure spacious potentiality. And I experience that as you described it, as, oh, there is this, let's call it consciousness or awareness. There is something which I am within which all this is arising. And it has no form and it has no limit and it is one with everything. That's true for me. But before there was a human being, before there was a me, that had yet to emerge. And then being wasn't consciousness. Being has become consciousness through the evolutionary process. Otherwise, you have to retrospect it and put that right at the beginning. And I don't think there's any good reason to do that. However, do I probably need to stop? Have I gone on for too long in my answer?
You've got 10 more seconds.
I'll come back to that thought.
Okay,
that's enough.
Okay, well, we can come back to things. Thank you very much. That concludes the more formal part of our discussion. I think it went well. I have to say, sitting here in the moderator's chair, it looks tremendously difficult to have these time slots and fill them. So well done to both of you. I'm glad I'm just moderating. So what I'll do now is as Tim asked the question the first, I'll come back to Tim and say, do you feel satisfied with the answer to David's question? Do you have more questions of idealism? And I'll just have an open discussion starting at that point. And I'm aware that then I've set it up so Tim is inquiring into David's consciousness-only approach. So at some point, we'll just ensure that that turns around and David will inquire openly into Tim. So Tim, please.
Okay, so being provocative, I suggest actually we're much closer than it may appear on the surface, partly because I really want to include all of that, because that's all my previous work, which I still hold. But rather it's to do with how we say it. Because it feels to me that actually what David has put forward, and he's done it very articulately, and he's done it in ways which I would have done it myself, is, so I have great sympathy for it, I'm saying, he's actually said, look, there's information. So there's information, and there's information which is not in my consciousness. So there's information which is what? Now we have to go, it's in some other consciousness. So we create some other consciousness for it to be in. And why is that conscious? See, it's the word consciousness which has ended up troubling me. When I wrote about it
Can I just interrupt just at that point? Maybe I have to say, when I say consciousness, everybody has to hear it with a capital C.
Famous capital C.
The biggest capital you can imagine.
What is that though? Because there's the nub of it. Mm. That capital C, because that's the route I went down, because that seemed like what was available. Capital C, what is the capital C?
Well, the capital C is that consciousness both knows and shows. It's not just...
Okay. What's the...
And so there's another... It's unfortunate in in English, and I'm in Germany now, and in German they have a Bewusstsein, and it has both meanings. It can mean something bigger, but the knowing, and but it can mean just, I use awareness as the knowing faculty, and consciousness as both the knowing and the showing. So it's only big C, not the God big C, but it's only that consciousness from, and it would be very difficult for me to swap all my vocabulary for the when I'm getting, you know, when we're getting involved here.
So how do you feel about this, David, then? So yep. For me, right the way back, I mean, you know, I said I've got that position, but actually right back to Jesus and the Goddess 20 years ago, when I wanted to write about this in an evolutionary setting, even then, because it felt like this is the underlying myth that needs to come out now, from this is the new Gnosticism that needs to arise. And so what I needed to go was, oh, well, the ground is awareness, or at that time, capital C consciousness. Yeah. And it starts as unconscious consciousness. And I had the idea of the dazzling darkness and this idea of paradoxical state. So I had, or awareness becomes conscious. So what's all that, in a way, all that's happened for me is I've gone, why am I putting in this subjective noun at the beginning, which then becomes conscious? Because it is absolutely clear to me that it becomes conscious. It is also clear to me that although right now the ground of my being is consciousness, I can be unconscious, and therefore it's not the ground of my being. So the ground of my being is not conscious. It can be conscious. So isn't it better to avoid that term and avoid all of the problems that arise with it? And then we can start integrating the insights from science and spirituality much easier.
Again, I think you're putting that consciousness is what I'm calling awareness, the consciousness of. And so I'm not saying consciousness is just conscious of. It can apparent forms or forms can appear in consciousness. And there's no problem. And I think consciousness can be conscious of itself with no objects. I don't know whether you've come upon him, Franklin Merrill Wolfe. He was a mathematician and a philosopher, and he'd been contemplating Shankara for some while, and he started to have a series of experiences. And as a mathematician and a philosopher, at one point he tried to write down in very short, terse aphorism terms. And the first one is, consciousness without an object is. And so consciousness is, in that case, it's not aware of objects. It isn't that when objects appear, consciousness, then the awareness comes up. It's that consciousness can be aware of itself. And I think that's what happens in deep sleep. I never have the feeling that I die, and then when I wake up, it's all of us, oh, I had a good sleep, but we don't remember it because there was no form coming up. And we're so used to being aware of form that when the form drops away, then it seems like, but it never seems like a blank when I wake up. And there are people who have been meditating for years who would say, well, and I've seen people on Rick's Buddha at the Gas Pump talking about, well, they never really go to sleep. They're always and I think that is a possibility. And I think that's how
if that is the case, and all of us, I think, wake up after deep sleep with a feeling of, oh, I've just been in this deep blissful place, then it seems to me that there's an experience and then there's form. So one of the things which I wrestle with is that a lot of spirituality has this negative under, you know, small print. And it comes from this idea of some sort of fall. So what I felt the need to articulate for myself is to express this deep positivity that arises for me from the deep awake experience, which makes me feel like, look, this is not a pointless thing. It's not like consciousness was already aware of itself, and then bingo, it had these thoughts, and the next thing you know, we're in this mess. It feels to me like this is a journey towards consciousness recognizing itself. Mm. Because when I look at primitive atoms, they don't look like they're recognizing themselves. But when I look at us, it looks like, oh, starting to happen. That's interesting. So the journey has been to greater and greater consciousness. So just as we see an objective evolution to greater and greater form, more complex form, alongside it, we see a subject evolution through greater and greater perception, discrimination, becoming conscious, becoming self-conscious, becoming the universe conscious of itself. That seems to be the goal for me, not the place it starts. And that seems much more optimistic and much more in kin with my own process, which is right now, consciousness is a conscious oneness, but that's what it's becoming. And when your mathematician Fred says consciousness simply is, what he's really saying is consciousness at that point is just being. It's not conscious. There's no subject and object.
Well, it's not aware. It's not aware in my terminology. It's not aware of objects. It's aware of itself.
But what does that mean to be aware of itself? Because that's surely the very thing which has actually come into being, to be aware of itself. And to be aware of itself and for it to be no experience but being.
Mm.
What is that to be aware of itself?
We'll just take David's answer to this, and then maybe that can lead into a question from David to Tim.
Just be
aware of time, and we could probably return to all these issues. So, David, answer, and then have your own question.
One thing I want to say: I don't have a negative point of view of this, and I'm just going to briefly, as part of my reply, tell you the experience I had. I'd been reading a lot of Nisargadatta, Ramash, Balsekar, and some of the current contemporary Neo-Vedantin people, and I thought, well, is this true? Is this really true that I'm just the witness? And I had a period where I was a bit immobilized. I'd had an operation on my knee and I couldn't do much and I was off work. And I thought, okay, what I'll do is to the best of my possibility, I'll see if this is true. And so I just try to hang out there and just witnessing, watching thoughts coming and going, watching the actions. And I was just doing this and I was just testing, is this really true? And then one day, I had this sudden, it wasn't a sudden, I had this feeling of this dynamism everywhere. Everything was alive. I could feel my heart beating. I could almost feel the blood moving in my veins. I looked out of the window and I could see birds. I could see branches and leaves on trees moving. And I didn't think it at the time. It takes a couple of sentences to say, but I didn't think it. And part of this view that you are the non-dual witness and you were just hanging out and let it all go on, this Maya, let it all go on. And then at that point, there was this sudden recognition that if I am one with everything, I am one with this dynamism too. And at that point, there was, I don't know, a descending energy and an explosion in the heart. That's all I could say. And it was like a sudden recognition that what moves everything is love, unconditional love, because there's this energy and it's positive and it is unconditional because it's moving everything. And so that is the basis of my view as well. So it's not a negative view, and I really contest this hanging out as the witness view. What else was in?
That's beautiful, by the way. I mean, and obviously, as you know, I'm sure you know me from all the times we spent together, that I completely resonate with that. I guess the thing I've come to with that is, and you've probably heard me when I do my little stuff on God and it's in the book, is like, how can I explain that experience? That's been my issue. How can I explain this being of love, which is all which is transcendent, in a world which also has plenty of evidence to the opposite of that? And once again, you see this another form of the same paralogical pair between the more religious spiritual view of, look, there's a great being, he's looking after us, and then the modern view, which is written from science, is, look, we've studied this in detail and there really isn't, because it's crazy and bleak and random. And there's things about the universe which show that this is true to me, and then there's things about the universe that definitely show this is true to me. So how can they both be true? And my solution is to go, look, what's happening now is a process whereby something greater is emerging in every second that includes everything that's been before. And that has led in my own lifetime, let alone over 13.8 billion years, to the emergence of ever greater novelty. What if that being of love is what's emerging now, not where it starts? And if you do that, you can there's room for both. Suddenly, both make sense. And you get this very simple insight, which is everything is the realization of ever deeper potentialities. And what's the deepest potentiality of all? The potentiality, the oneness of the universe, recognizing itself as that. And through us, when we awaken, when we have those experiences, that's happening. And then there's this being of oneness, which is we experience as love. And then suddenly this is what's on the agenda now. But it seems like the ground, but it's actually the most emergent. It's the ground having become conscious of itself, or in the process of becoming conscious of itself.
Go ahead, David, if some questions or whatever you want.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I think it's time that I take on emergence.
Okay, let's do that. That's quite a central idea for me. So I'll all come crumbling down without that.
I think what you've done, you said you wanted to try and find to unify what you call objective science and subjective spirituality. You wanted to bring them together. And at this stage, many people want to include science. And what many people take for granted as a given, as an absolutely existential fact, is that the universe started with the Big Bang, and that's a theory. That's a theory. And also there is the conventional Darwinian theory of evolution. Now, you've tried to overcome the problem of the Big Bang. It seems to me that science wants to a scientist like Richard Dawkins or somebody like that would scoff at Christians believing in the virgin birth. But science wants to believe in the virgin birth of the universe. It came out of nothing. So give us this miracle, then we'll explain the rest. But then it goes along the line, and then it comes to the next miracle it wants, and that is, how did life come out of lifeless matter? And then there is no I've tried to look into this as much as I can, and there is no proven theory of how that happens. That's the next miracle along the way, as far as I'm concerned. And then you go further along the line, and you get to, how did awareness come out of this living stuff, the brain? And that's the third miracle. So along the line, but what you have done is put in the word emergence for each of those. And I think there's
just so I'm clear, David, in what you're saying. So are you saying that evolution doesn't work for you as an idea?
Let me go on.
It's always been here like this.
No, let me go on a bit further. First of all, with emergence, I think you use it, and other people have used it. Examples of emergent phenomena is like oxygen and hydrogen, both gases. They come together, and then you have a liquid. How did that happen? The liquidity is a emergent phenomena. In this case, what I would say is that you can examine both and study both oxygen and hydrogen with the sciences of chemistry and physics. You can also study water with the sciences of chemistry and physics. When you get to the point of matter becoming life, you have to add in a whole new science to explain life. You have to bring in biology. And so it's not on this, in the same way as oxygen and hydrogen. And then another example, and again, I think you use it as well, is that you have single-celled organisms which come together and seem to form, or they not only seem to form, they combine together to form a larger or a more complex organism, which has a seems to have a life of its own, but that is different, completely different from the other kind of emergence, because in water, oxygen doesn't behave like oxygen, hydrogen doesn't behave like hydrogen, but in a complex multi-celled creature, each individual cell still behaves like an individual cell. So they're two completely different kinds of emergence. And so I think there are big problems with the theory of evolution in that there's a real gap in, I'm not a creationist and I'm not a steady state, but there's a real problem with missing links.
Okay, so just so I'm clear, David, I want to be really clear. So not a creationist, you're not a steady stater, so you do think evolution's happened. So this emergence, as I call it, has happened. Do you think?
Well,
it's just how it's happened. Is that what you're?
I've been rereading recently. He's a guy called John Davidson. He was had master's degree and worked for 14 years at Cambridge University. So he was really familiar with the biological sciences, but he also was very familiar with Eastern mysticism and had an Indian master. So he really looked into both traditions and what he suggests is, and then this is really controversial, I'm still exploring this aspect, because I think there are real challenges with evolution, that there's no evidence for the miss. Darwin thought, once he'd established this theory, then as time passed, there would be plenty of evidence for the missing links to come along, and they just haven't come.
I'm still confused. Are we debating how does evolution happen, or are we debating that emergence never happened at all?
Because I think there may have been things emerged, haven't they?
They just have. Life has emerged. 10 billion years ago,
This is a question. If we take quantum physics, the Copenhagen interpretation of quantum physics, that there are no objects, subatomic particles, and they're doing it with larger and larger objects, and I talk of buckyballs, that they don't appear unless they are observed.
So I'm
coming along a little bit along the lines of Robert Lanza, and biocentrism, and so that there is the possibility that there wasn't these
I have to say, I think the mythos, because I guess that's what it is, of the evolving universe, which is very new, 100 years, a bit over, expanded from just the idea of life evolving, which was revolutionary. It's the whole universe evolving. I think it's stunning in the way that it brings everything together into one narrative. And I think, albeit in way, I'm sure it will transform in ways I can't imagine. It is incredibly explanatory, and that given how much it explains, it has worked wonders the whole way through. So the question then becomes, I think you're right. I think that the emergence is happening in new ways all the time. That's the whole point for me. Emergence is happening now in soul, nothing to do with atoms or anything. It's just happening with ideas. That's all. This is part of that emergence. So each stage has been marked, and there are these kind of key transitions which are really interesting, and you've labeled them. So there's a difference with the emergence of life. Having said that, you know, I've just been in conversation with Bruce Dammer, who with his colleagues are coming up with some absolutely blinding insights about how polymers formed to create basic cells, which are on the brink between chemical and what you might call life. So I think, you know, we're making even ground in there. And with the evolution of consciousness, for me, it's not like there was a piece of meat, an object, and then bingo, consciousness came. It's that it's kind of similar to panpsychism, but it's not panpsychism. Because panpsychism, the word is all soul, so everything's got spirit or soul. I'm not saying that. Soul has evolved, imagination, psyche has evolved, but everything has got subjectivity, because every individual time stream, individual thing, is reading the world around it, whether it's electrochemically or then sensually or then conceptually, like we are. So that what's happening is that just as there's a complexity of the objective information, there's a subsequent complexity of the subjective interpretation. And that those two are going hand in hand. Now, that is incredibly mysterious. And, you know, it's just the very bones of an understanding, but it doesn't have, per se, the problems you're pointing to, I don't think. And then you end up with the quantum physics thing. And Lanza and that, who I heard and was discussing with about the science and non-duality. Look, I think that it is... The problem, I mean, I think quantum physics is fascinating. You know, I've written about it. In fact, I've written about how so many of them became idealists. But the problem with the quantum physics things, for me, is it's just so reductionist. And reductionism is the opposite of this emergentism. And it's the thing I most dislike about materialism. Because it's going, because something is true on this very, very basic level, it's true on the higher levels. Whereas I think the opposite is the fact that actually the more emergent evolved levels are in a sense more real or more emergently real. So that the fact that this is true on the basic level does not follow. And as far as we know, so far, we've not found that when a cup's not observed, it's disappeared. So what we've, or it only comes into being, it doesn't even know what it is. And then it's a cup. Now, so what I want to just play with that one thought, and then I'll pass it on. So that there's a whole lot of stuff with the quantum physics things, but I would like to just playfully, as I'm not a quantum physicist, I would like to suggest that it's true on that basic level does not mean that it transfers to another, but that actually my whole thesis is that at every moment new possibilities are manifesting, and that when you get down to the very most primitive levels, you see that. You see it could be a particle, it could be a wave, depending on how you look at it. And then the looking at it brings it into what it is. Interesting, though, it's not observation by a conscious. It's not when consciousness is present. It's when measurement is present. So that actually the fact that there's a conscious person there isn't the issue, because it can happen when the measurement is made. And obviously that someone eventually will have to be conscious of it, which is used as a justification. Well, but it's a different thing. So here, just... we can't, too big to probably go into, but my own thought on it is that what you have here is actually an example of what I call in the book narrativity, which is the fact that the most emergent quality in soul is narrative, story, and that actually life has become a dream. It's become a story. It's based on physics and on biology, but it's given birth to a dream, a meaningful story which interacts with all the other levels. And that it's doing that all the time, hence synchronicities and magic and those, you know, all the things that makes our lives numinous. And that what we're seeing at the most primitive level is that happens. That actually we weave the coming into and out of existence into the story, and it plays a role in that, because we're engaging it now in the story of I'm studying quantum physics. And the universe responds to that, because the most emergent thing is us. And we have this effect on the least emergent thing. But that doesn't mean that somehow that's the reality, and that all of this is really not nothing. And, you know, it's only there because we're looking, because of consciousness.
David, we have to start moving towards the end, I'm sure. But I really don't want to let Tim get away with that. something about the corpse existing when it's not observed. I've got something to say about that. Well, whatever else.
When I say not observed by a conscious being, I mean, because...
Well, the interesting thing that I was going to put a post on your forum, but I always run out of words when I try to do it, because some of the issues are very big. And somebody put a post, and you put it up about the Tom Campbell stuff. It's very, I'm trying to wade through his experiments. I mean, what he's trying to do with his experiments are very significant, and he's trying to show whether it is true, whether it's just a measurement, or whether there has to be consciousness of the measurement for something to be seen to exist. And I think the thing is, like, when you held up your and I hold up this glass, when it goes out there, it does cease to exist as it was for me.
Yes, but, I agree with that completely. Yeah. I agree with that.
But the information, and you use information as the objective, right. But the information is still there. But
so in what way is it consciousness only then, David? If the information is still there, which I agree with completely,
yeah.
The cup is my experience. Because
it's an appearance, but, and it's in and of my consciousness when it's there.
Yes, because that's your interpretation of the information. You've just said so yourself. Now the cup's not in my consciousness. The information's still there, but it's not like I experience it to be. It's like the cup's experiencing itself, or it's like the atoms are experiencing themselves, or a cat you saw it might experience it.
Maybe we're a bit... This is why I use the analogy of virtual reality, the mass multi... player on online role play games, because I don't think we're living in a computer simulation, so that's not my we're not in a dream and we're not in a computer simulation, so, and it's positive, but for me it's a useful analogy about this information and appearance, because the objectivity there lies at the level of the servers. There's for example, you could is at the level of the servers, but and it's not in any kind of form, and it's not in any kind of time. It's outside time and form as experience, but in the individual's display there is 3D form. And so you have 3D.
It sounds exactly the same as what I'm saying. It doesn't sound like consciousness only at all, but it sounds the same. It's like there's information being interpreted.
But where is the information?
Where?
Yeah.
What's it in? Well, it's clearly not. It's clearly not always in consciousness, because that cup is not in consciousness.
No, but that's not in my individual consciousness.
Well, okay. Well, unless you've got a capital C, whoever that is, all you've done really is just thrown in a word, because that.
But
that consciousness looking at the cup, or aware of the cup?
Well, it's. That's what it seems to be now. If I feel this cup, where is this glass for me now?
You're aware of it, but is the capital C consciousness aware of that cup? See, it seems to me.
It is through me.
Yes, but when you're not looking at it, what I would suggest is that capital C consciousness is conscious of everything to the degree that it can be through everything. And so that cup, that all the monsters in that cup, it's like, it's not one dream, it's billions of dreams. You can only justify calling that consciousness when it becomes conscious of itself. So in the cup, it's not. In those atoms, it's not.
Yeah, we have to go. Yep.
It's conscious of itself through a conscious being. Then you could say it's consciousness. So what's happened, it seems to me, is that human beings like yourself and me and Richard have had the experience of waking up to the ground of being and going, oh, the ground of being is pure consciousness, because that's what happens. But we haven't had an evolutionary picture that's gone, oh, it hasn't always been like this. And what we need to do is just update that realization to take into account what science has shown us over the last 300 years, so that spirituality can keep its deep insights, but actually take on where the cutting edge has been for 300 years. And I think in doing that, spirituality will then become the cutting edge again.
Okay. David, go ahead. Go on. But let's start to wind the conversation. You know, we can come back to it and do it another time.
There's one last statement I'd like to make before we end, though, Richard.
Yes, go ahead. Go ahead. Both of you, go ahead and make, you know, another. Well, I was planning on doing a formal 3-minute thing.
Okay.
So you can say, David, I interrupted you as you were about to say, but, so.
I think, again, you were using, I said, my consciousness with the big C wasn't the bigger C. It was just that consciousness is something which can know, being aware of, being conscious of, being aware of, but it also is the form that we experience. And the bigger C, if you like, is only has potential and awareness, but we're tantalizingly close in some ways, but also sometimes we seem a long way apart. But the individual form as experienced as forms in consciousness is in the individual fields of consciousness, in the individual souls. That's what I was going to say there. And I wait to. I won't be around when these experiments on life. I think the book by Philip Camello goes into this in a lot of. Do you know your collapse of materialism? I was surprised to find your name on the blurb of that. I think it's an excellent. He goes in. He's very weak on the consciousness only. Explanation, but I think he's very, very good at going into the details of where the standard model of physics and the theory of evolution fall down. So I think with quantum physics, the problem is we're not mathematicians, and it's all open to the interpretation of the.
The real problem is that quantum physicists aren't philosophers, so they end up saying things which don't actually make any sense. They often know they're doing that, but and some have been, Niels Bohr, for instance. But often they're not, and so what happens is we get things said which we need to analyze the concepts using. Because once you move out of maths and into language, then you're dealing conceptually. So, But I also think it's very, very interesting. I just think it's being interpreted in a very, very reductionist way. And if we interpret it in an emergentist way, you get something far more interesting, which is, like I said, to do.
Yeah, I think not everything, not all of them were interpreted in a reductionist way. People like Schrödinger didn't, and Sir James Jeans, who was around at the time as quantum physics was
coming. Yeah, I mean, he's
the and he had a very nice sentence.
The fundamental insight, which goes, that's the way reality is, given that it's not true here. Things aren't popping in and out
they absolutely are for you. As you move your head, things are popping in and out of your vision.
They're popping, and so
we're not talking.
But the peekaboo lesson has taught me that they're actually still there.
Now, but the information is still there. This is why virtual reality is a good. Example. In your display, they're not there, but the information about the body, about the avatar, and the objects as you experience them, it's information, which is not an object.
Of course, and that materialism, like I said right at the start, that collapsed 100 years ago. I don't think anyone who understands modern science can be a materialist in that sense. What they are now is objectivists. There are people that go, the information is what's real. And there's other people that go, no, consciousness is what's real, and it's throwing up the information. And what I'm saying is, actually, they are both emerging as the subjective and objective poles of the non-dual reality.
Okay. I flipped a coin at the start. Can't remember who won the toss. It was Tim to go first. 3 minutes for a closing statement on this whole.
Okay, well, I thought when I was thinking about this, when I was having a little walk today, I thought what I want to do is I want to put out an olive branch to the people. You know, the sad truth is I spend an awful lot of time trying to develop these ideas to address objectivists or materialists, but actually I meet far more spiritual people, idealists, and those are the people that find the most difficulty with what I say often. So I want to put an olive branch to both, because I think paralogically, both are right, but need to shift. So the great insight, which I think the emergent spirituality gives, that endorses the standard scientific materialism, is, look, consciousness has evolved. You know, it is emergent. It makes perfect sense. You know, the original universe is just physical. It becomes life, and it then becomes conscious. We then have soul, this completely non-spatial dimension. We can give that, albeit it's not just an object. It's subject and object. We can see the reality of that narrative. On the other hand, you know, right at the end of the book, I step in and go, look, having said that everything's emerging from the Big Bang, my own hunch, and God knows this is speculative, is that actually this is only for our universe, and that our universe is born of other universes, born of other universes, born of other universes. And what that points to is a deeply paralogical insight, which goes, there is always the meeting of the past and the possible. So what came before our universe? Then already realized universes. What would you be another name for that? God. So that actually we are, in a new way, in a random way, retracing embryonically courses that have been before, which is in the same way, like, you know, I started off as a few cells, and then what do you know? I became an embryo, and what do you know? I became a human being. Now, how that was going to work out, whether it would be successful, what shapes and forms, would be decided by a million things. And that analogy, which is an ancient mythic analogy, is actually, you know, the cosmic egg is being laid by something. So that before the universe, you can see the same pattern of fall. Yes, fall, because it's come from something greater and started again. But also evolution. And evolution, because it's constantly like a wheel, although it's circular, is moving forward. And my own belief is that we're doing that as souls in and out of life as well. So we're also fallen in that sense. We've fallen from some greater realization, which is why when you wake up, you go, I know this, because you do. And yet we've lost it and we refined it. But in that wheel, actually, because of the accumulation of the past, it becomes still richer. So the overall arc is evolutionary. And that enables us to bring in all of these different insights from spirituality and the fall and the presence of consciousness and the scientific insight of everything emerging in deeper and deeper ways. And go, look, these can fit together. And if we can do that, we've got a truly mythos for a new age.
Thank you, Tim. Perfectly timed again. David, go ahead with your 3-minute summary now, please.
Right. The first thing I would say, there was no need for an olive branch in this case, because we're both... Yeah, essentially we are coming from the same place, and we are individuals trying to come to grips with this mystery. We're hopeless cases, really, because we're individuals trying to come to grips with this mystery, which is beyond us, but we can't help having a try at it. So there's no need for an olive branch, and I really appreciate what you're trying to do. I call myself a reluctant idealist, because it's not fashionable at all at the moment. It's the ontology that dare not speak its name. There are the straight physicists, and then there are the slightly bi psychers, but to come out and say you're an idealist or a consciousness only is a bit different at the moment. I still think there are problems and with the emergent that things emerged in that way, and I'm still coming to grips with the idea myself that these subatomic particles, they didn't really exist as such before they were observe. Sir James Jean said, you go beyond the mathematics at your own risk. This is one of the problems we try to, this might just be the mathematics of the physics engine behind the universe. But physicists would like to say it's all mathematics. But I think there are other more subtle forms of what I call quasi objective things, like stupid word, like in shamanism, the power animals and archetypes. That these are they seem similar, but they're a bit different. They come we interpret them. So I think there are more and more subtle levels of information as well as the pure physics information, and so. The more I really look into it, and if you really see the outside world, I'm looking out at my window at the garden at the moment, and a bird just flew past, and and so it really can feel that this is in my consciousness and of my consciousness.
John, okay. Thank you very much. I feel we've resolved all the issues once and for all.
Yep. I'm glad we did that.
I think it's very nice we could end up with that experiential place, because that is certainly somewhere where we meet very easily, because it's definitely the experience that I call being deep awake. This is all arising within consciousness, because for me it damn well is. And actually, in a very real sense, that recognition of our deep being is the recognition of the oneness from which it's all arising. So we're connected with it all.
I'll link under the video to some of the experiential exercises you have online, Tim. David, I know we've been talking about producing some of an exercise along the lines you do. So if you do that, or when you publish your book, I will come straight online and link to it beneath this video too, whenever that happens. So if you're watching this in the future, there might be a book link to there and all sorts. So, but, you know, we'll put something experiential below so people can delve into that. Absolutely. And be very happy to receive people's thoughts on how they felt the format of this went. If I felt the debate thing was a really nice introduction to the dialogue, the kind of formalized aspect, be interested in how people feel about that and what themes people have picked up on that we could go into more. So maybe we can do this again and just pick like one particular theme and then go into it in more depth. So yep, would appreciate anyone's thoughts out there. Gentlemen, thank you very much for this afternoon.
Thank you, Richard. And thank you, David, for being
here. Thank you.
It was great. I really love talking to you as always.
Yeah, it was great. Thank you.